Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this June 16th, 2023. 3 o'clock on your dial, and you have your host, James J. Mailoff, here. At 3:30, we are going to welcome in our great friend, Rock Larson, from Wood County Veteran Services. Looking forward to talking with Rock. Looking forward to talking with Senator Patrick Teston right now, joins us monthly. Appreciate you joining us, sir.
James, thanks for having me.
How are you doing?
Well, I'm a little bit tired today. We had a late/early morning. We were Joint Finance Committee took action on several budget items last night, and it was a long day of negotiations back and forth, and we were initially set to go in at 6 p.m. and ended up going in at 11 and wrapped up at around 2:30.
Can't imagine all the different conversations and how that went. Looking forward to hearing a little bit more about it. Certainly, we appreciate you guys working into the long nights. Bit of a breaking news overnight. The GOP lawmakers rejected funding for the continuation of child care subsidiary programs. Sir, you and I and every politician that's joined us, one of the main things we've talked about is child care. What is the cause? Why was this done? And what is being done to counter this so that we can take care of child care in the future?
Yeah, this continues to remain a big topic of conversation. And obviously, you know, that was a very contentious discussion point last night, was whether or not to continue the COVID era programs that Governor Evers had using one-time money from the federal government. And unfortunately, this is one of those areas that I think we're going to see more and more of as the timeline to use federal money runs out. And so essentially what's happened is we're creating these fiscal cliffs. Now, the governor had created a program called Child Care Counts, which used one-time money, and there were a lot of discussions as to whether or not there should be continuation of that program. And ultimately, the committee, we decided through our omnibus motion not to continue that program, just with the concerns of the cost to continue. However, there were some important things that were done last night. In fact, we increased eligibility for low-income families to utilize various programs within DCF that help with subsidies for child care. And then also, we put aside within the JFC supplemental account $15 million because a number of our colleagues in both the Senate and the Assembly are working on a package of bills that we think will help better address in a more targeted way increase in access to child care. So while the main headline today is the GOP votes down access to child care using the Child Care Counts program that used one-time federal money, it's not an issue that is going away. And so we're going to continue to work on this issue. And with some of the things that were done last night, I do think it's going to help move the needle. Now, granted, it still remains a big issue, especially as it relates to allowing parents to get back in the workforce. And so I do think you're going to see continued legislative efforts even after this budget is completed.
I imagine you hear from constituents. I know I hear from listeners. This is one of the biggest topics of our lives, figuring this out and getting this right. You're never going to hear anybody say just spend, spend, spend. I don't think anybody's okay with that. But it's understandable, I would think, from your most people out there. You see this net, you wake up this morning, you see that headline, it's going to call your attention and you're going to have some concerns. I encourage people to always read articles. Don't read headlines, read articles and read multiple articles to find out the information that you're going to get. But when it comes right down to just stripping all this away, we still come back to what is going to be done about child care in this state. Wisconsin is more than half of Wisconsinites live in child care in a child care empty zone. We've got obviously the numbers that we have from the pandemic. You and I have touched on this topic many, many times. So it is one of the most vital things that you and your team over there and you and your colleagues have is figuring this out. I don't want to make it seem like it's, hey, here's the problem, get it done. We got to do this as a society. We got to figure this out. But I would think that this is one of the main talking points anytime you are going to work.
Oh, absolutely. And so, again, there's still going to be legislative efforts that are going to try and address this issue, because as you referenced, it's true. You know, half of Wisconsin counties are child care deserts where there are lack of providers. And over the last several months, I've had the opportunity to sit down with a number of early childhood educator facilities throughout the 24th Senate District and even some outside my district. And I even spent the day working at one. And, you know, I think we're having conversations with individuals who, and to be frank, kind of realize that the expectations that the continuation of using one-time money from the federal government from the pandemic was likely not going to be a starting point. And so, you know, we're going to continue to sit down and think outside the box as opposed to just throw money at the issue and not actually address the root cause of some of these problems, whether it's trying to increase slots, whether we're trying to attract more individuals into the profession. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, I talked to a provider who has two facilities in the Madison area, and his father's actually lives in Wisconsin Rapids area. And we had a really good conversation, and he's been able to have a model that works for him and for his families. Two facilities that have over 200 students enrolled at both locations, and they have an economic model that is actually sustainable. And I'm hoping to continue those conversations with him to see if we can find a way to apply that, because if we can get these facilities and these childcare facilities to a point where it's actually attractive for individuals to go into this profession, but more importantly, to retain those professionals, because it is not an easy job. I can tell you from the day I spent at the UWSP childcare facility, it gave me a newfound appreciation as you've got couple dozen toddlers running around creating all types of havoc and what they have to put up with. It's not an easy task. And so I do think there are approaches that we can take to help build the pipeline. And I'm looking forward to working with my colleagues over the course of the next several months as we, one, get past this budget process, but then as we look towards the rest of the legislative calendar to use some of the resources that we set aside within the JFC supplemental account to really try and hone in and find the exact pinch points that will hopefully alleviate some of these areas where we've got some challenges within child care delivery here in the state.
And I understand people have been patient on this subject, but it's not going to be an overnight fix. It's not going to be a one bill solution. It's going to take a lot more work than that, and it's going to take time to get this right. We all got to give each other grace when it comes to that. I want to talk more with you about your UW trip in a moment, but first I was actually going to start our show with this before the breaking news this morning and everything, because you were a part in support of two most really historic bills that are going to invest in education and local government. Would you mind telling us a little bit more about those?
Yeah, I was really relieved and excited when last Wednesday a deal was struck between legislative leadership in both houses as well as the governor's office that I think you summed up perfectly. Historic. This is really generational change as it relates to how we fund local government as well as our education system. So we've all heard over the last several years, and even before I was in the legislature, the challenges that local units of government were facing with levy limits. And then on top of that, when you throw in 40-year high inflation, a dollar doesn't stretch as far as it did even just 4 or 5 years ago. And so being cognizant of that, discussions have been ongoing for months between legislative leadership and some of my colleagues who spearheaded this, particularly State Representative Tony Kurtz and State Senator Mary Felskowski, and really crafted a deal that I think is going to be a game changer, especially for areas of our state and some of our smaller townships and municipalities, where now they're going to see a 20% increase in shared revenue, which, 20% on face value may not seem like much, but based on how the old formula was written, and in fact, I've got a few townships that are actually going to see a 400%, or in one particular case, nearly a 4,000% increase in shared revenue. So really what this is all about is making sure that we are helping fund core functions of government, things like public safety, police, fire, EMS, making sure that, towns have money for roads and infrastructure. And so this is a big deal. And on top of that, given the county and the city of Milwaukee the tools to help themselves and write their failed pension obligations with the ability to levy an increased sales tax in the city as well as the county. And I want to touch on that real quick, James, if I can, because we've heard some folks say that this is a bailout to Milwaukee, and that's simply not the case. A bailout would imply that we simply gave them a blank check and say, here you go, do with it what you will. Really what this does, it has some guidelines and guardrails put in place so they can right the ship, make sure that their unfunded pension liabilities get fixed, while at the same time maintaining core functions of government, which is public safety, and making sure that they maintain a sufficient level of police and fire, as well as detectives, because they've been having a huge crime surge down there for the last several years. And as I've always said, when Milwaukee does well, the state does well. Mm-hmm. And when Milwaukee is not doing well, while we may not necessarily feel it up by us, it does impact us both directly and indirectly. And so along with that, as part of the agreement, were historic changes, not just to how we fund local units of government, but also into our educational system. What I was really excited about with the education side of this deal is that we are going to invest nearly $1 billion new dollars into our K-12 education system, raise up our low revenue districts like we have many here in central Wisconsin, Stevens Point, Wisconsin Rapids, Port Edwards, and Nacoosa, just to name a few, and bump them up to $11,000 per pupil, as well as providing an additional $325 per student in each year of the biennium, mm-hmm. while at the same time also increasing the opportunities for choice and charter, the choice and charter program. So, you know, parents have the opportunity to have an educational system that works for their sons and daughters. If you would have told me at the start of this session, as these conversations kicked off, that we would get to a point where both Republicans and Democrats would find agreement on both of these huge major issues, I would have told you I wasn't going to hold my breath. Mm-hmm. But through a lot of give and take, we came up with what I believe is a great compromise, and more importantly, a historic reforms for the state.
Yeah, just to touch on a couple of things you mentioned there, because I've also heard from listeners about this, the Milwaukee situation and some of that. And you touched on it. I think you worded it perfectly. I think of this situation very similar to Illinois money or Minnesota money or you know, any neighboring state. We complain sometimes about, you know, visitors in the state or fibs or any of these things. But boy, you would miss it if you didn't have those dollars. You need those dollars. We've just recently had the tourism numbers come out and record numbers in tourism dollars here in this state. You need that money. As this state, as Milwaukee, as Madison go, how Wisconsin goes. Whether you like that or not, that is the case. That is a big part of this. Investing in Milwaukee is investing in Nacoosa, investing in Port Edwards, investing in, it's all connected. That bothers me a little bit. And I say miss me with that, because if you care about this state, you got to care about every county, every city in the state. It's all connected. To the point of your mentioning about the not seeing this happening, you know, didn't see this one coming or anything. You're not alone. Neither am I. I ask politicians all the time to own things when things don't go their way or they make a mistake or anything else. And I'm doing the same thing right now. I've gotten on you. I've gotten on Representative Krug and Katrina Shankland and about, wait, why are we not putting more money in our education system? And here we are. We're doing it. So I'm very proud of this. I'm very happy to see it. I also think these bills really are a great show to the rest of the country. This is how a purple state can work. This can work. It doesn't have to be, I bicker at you, you bicker at me, and then we go our separate ways. You can work these things through. I think it's a great example to the rest of the country of, look, we can work together. We can make these things happen. And look what happens when we do. $1 billion in resources to our schools, a raised revenue ceiling. This is the great accomplishments we can do when we work together.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think it's just a testament of leadership in both houses, as well as folks within the Evers administration, being able to sit down and recognize that, you know, we've got some challenges and this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. And, you know, thankfully we seized the opportunity. It passed on bipartisan votes out of both houses. And now we just await the governor's signature. And so I think it's a great day. It absolutely is, because it's not every day that you can say we're able to increase education funding by over $1 billion. We're able to give more money back to our local communities for key essential services. And what's really incredible as we come down to the final stretch here within the state budget process is that we still have an opportunity to usher in historic tax cuts. And so, as I've said in previous bienniums, we have proven we have the ability that we can make major investments in key areas of government and into our state, and still at the same time provide significant tax relief to our residents here. And that was the other thing, too, that we did this week. We passed a historic transportation budget, nearly $1.55 billion in new investments going into our roads, bridges, and highways. And what I was particularly happy about is, along with the share of revenue package that's going to get signed hopefully this week yet, but within the transportation budget, I think we are able to do a great job of identifying and recognizing that, you know, we still have some challenges as it relates to our roads and highways here in the state. And so, you know, we're providing $100 million in the LRIP program, which is the local road improvement program, where local governments have the ability to apply for grant dollars. And we also created a new program as it relates to agricultural related roads, and that's a $150 million investment, along with providing 2% increases in transportation aids in year one and year two of our budget. We actually have a lower, we're not bonding at a higher rate as we were in previous budgets. And so really what we're trying to do is use the one-time money that we have to buy down debt, not have to borrow as much, and really setting up future legislatures as well as future budgets in a really good position. And, you know, I was given the task of writing the transportation budget for the Senate Republicans. And, you know, when we saw the initial numbers, they weren't pretty. And we were looking at a pretty big deficit in year two of our budget year. And we were able to turn that around and actually leave the transportation fund with a surplus, which was no easy task. And so, again, just another great example of what we've been able to accomplish since we started this budget process. And I'm really excited to see what the final product's going to look like when hopefully we wrap up our work on the Finance Committee next week. And then it'll be off to both chambers and hopefully off to the governor's desk to get his signature.
Speaking with State Senator Patrick Teston right here on Midday Magazine. Thank you for joining us. Sir, you and a Adams County a DA, you know, last fall, I should say, yeah, he brought something to your attention. And I want to spend some time talking about how you and your colleagues are working to strengthen the sexual contact laws in the state.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, a district attorney down in Adams County brought this to our attention earlier in the year. And it's really not a comfortable subject to talk about, but I think it's one that's important, where there was a loophole within the state statutes as it relates to sexual contact. And there was a particular case within our area, I believe it was in Adams County, where an individual committed a heinous act. And, you know, I'll try and be as light about it as I can, but essentially it was an issue where some bodily fluids were excreted onto a paper plate, and this individual made his stepsister touch it. And unfortunately, and as gross as that is and as shameful as that is, as our current statutes are written, it's technically not a crime. And so when we were approached about this, one, my floor was on the ground because I couldn't believe that this was even allowable or how this individual couldn't be charged. And so we set to work to create legislation and tighten that to make sure that in instances like this and others that you know, that they can be prosecuted as they rightly should be. And so that bill is working its way through the legislature. It's, I believe it's passed out of the assembly. We're waiting for a Senate floor vote, which should be coming up shortly. And again, I know it's had broad bipartisan support, and I think we want to make sure that in special circumstances such as these, we're delivering justice where justice is due.
And I appreciate that work. You know, us at the Family Center, being on the board at the Family Center, this is one of those topics in these kind of situations where we're used to dealing with. It means so much to have the support of our legislation, our politicians, the DA's office, all these people bringing attention to these things. It makes the work that the Family Center does a little more easier and a little more maybe a little more support to these things. And I appreciate are you out there listening, the awkwardness and the uncomfortableness of this. It has to be that way, though. We spent way too long ignoring these topics. I did not have to bring this up to you, sir, but I appreciate you tackling the conversation with me and, more importantly, working with your colleagues to make it so we don't have these gray areas in our laws and we protect the people that cannot speak for themselves. We protect the youth. We protect everybody when it comes to this stuff. Everybody, nobody deserves to be dealing with this, and it's good work that you're doing there on that. Appreciate it. I also wanted to talk to you recently. You were part of a listening session on broadband over at Midstate. Good morning to our friends over at Midstate. Can you tell us a little bit how that went?
I don't know if I was there for that.
You were the PSC and the holding the listening session. Oh, you weren't there for it. I apologize.
No, I was down in Madison.
Okay, but I did want to bring attention to the situation of broadband a little bit and what the PSC is doing with that. The Public Service Commissions of Wisconsin bringing a lot of awareness to the importance of broadband.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is again, I'm a firm believer we're in a day and age where broadband has to be considered as part of our infrastructure. And so, you know, we didn't invest any new state dollars into the broadband expansion grant program when we took up the Public Service Commission, primarily because this is one of the few times where we have providers coming out to us, the individuals who lay cable on the ground, and just they were saying, please pump the brakes a little bit. We don't have the bandwidth, no pun intended, or the capacity right now with all the money that is coming into the state, because we're expected to receive anywhere from $750 to over $1 billion from the broadband or from the bipartisan infrastructure bill. And so what we're doing right now is waiting for those guidelines to come down. And then once they do, figure out how we can implement that into our existing broadband expansion program, because it is critically important that we connect every home in this state as best that we can with high-speed internet, because it's critical for commerce, it's critical for healthcare delivery, it's critical for even education. So, you know, that's one thing that we're going to continue to push and invest in. And to put this in perspective, so over the years, we've made significant investments from the state to broadband expansion grant programs. And even with the investment that we have, the money that we're going to receive from the federal government here in the near future doubles of what we've been able to invest at the state and projects that we've been able to get completed. And so that's one of the reasons we took the approach that we did on the Finance Committee, is because, you know, we don't just want to, again, throw as much money at the wall and then have that money sit there and not get actually utilized. And so I'm hopeful that we'll have hopefully a big announcement here in the near future, and we'll receive some of these federal dollars and continue to build out our network.
You recently spent some time at Camp Randall Stadium, learned a little bit more about UW's athletic program, the facilities. You touched on that a little bit earlier. How did that go? And did you get a scholarship? Did you, Coach Fickell, you know, he's looking for more people. He's taking that transport portal is open.
Yeah, well, I was joking with the assistant athletic director who gave me the tour, and I said, well, you know, I still have 4 years of eligibility, so if we want to hit the weight room and the coach comes by, maybe I'll get a chance to walk on this season for the Badgers.
But be doing the same thing.
The reason I was there, so a couple budgets ago when I was on the State Building Commission, which is tasked with enumerating all construction projects at the state level, we actually approved the reconstruction of the south end zone. And so they want to take me through and see the project now that's being completed. And boy, that was really a cool experience, because, you know, oftentimes when we vote on projects like that, you sometimes get to see, you know, the prints of what they could look like and the great graphics and everything, but to actually walk through it, it was really neat. And what's unique about the UW football program is that it generates 80% of all revenue for all men's and women's sports programs there. So it really is the economic driver for the athletic department. And you know, the reason they took me through the tour is that while, you know, we renovated the south end zone at Camp Randall, their training facilities and where they practice, it's really kind of in shambles. And so that was one of the projects that got enumerated within the state building projects program in this budget. And what's great about this particular program is that it's all program revenue. So it's generated from sales tickets and things of that nature. And so it's not one of those where the taxpayers are on the hook. And hopefully, you know, that one will stay in once the budget gets signed into law. And, well, hopefully Bucky's going to have a good year. There's a lot of excitement around Coach Fickell.
Oh, yeah. And some of these recruits he's bringing in. I am very excited. On Wisconsin should be a lot of fun. Sir, we're wrapping up, and as we do, you know how I work. I have to ask hard questions sometimes, so I have to wrap up with a tougher question. It is Dairy Month, and here at the station, we've been doing a poll question asking our audience, you know, what's your favorite dairy product? So here's the tough one. What you get to pick one. What is your favorite dairy product? We've got votes for ice cream, chocolate milk, butter, cheese, frozen custard. You got to vote.
That's a tough one, Jason.
It is, like, yeah.
Who's your favorite child?
But yes, exactly.
If I had to pick one of my favorite dairy products, I got to go with cheese.
Ah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Another vote for cheese. That's a good one, sir. Thank you. Thank you for playing along, of course, sir. Senator Teston, always appreciate you joining us. For those new listeners out there, Senator Teston joins us every month, always an open and very transparent conversation that I greatly appreciate, sir. If people do want to ask you their questions, they have stuff that they want to follow up on or anything, is there a way to reach you?
Yeah, absolutely. If anyone needs to get in contact with my office, or if you're running into any issues with state government, not that that would ever happen. That's a joke. They can reach out to my office at 608-266-3123. Shoot us an email at sen.teston, T-E-S-T-I-N, at legis.wy.gov. Shoot us an email, give us a call, follow us on social media, and door's always open.
Happy Father's Day, sir. Have a great weekend.
You as well.
We'll talk again soon. State Senator Patrick Teston joining us right there. Thank you for the time. We're going to have more Midday Magazine coming up for you right here on WFHR, locally grown radio.